Welcome to the Dad Cave with my dad, Stephen Hayes.
And my dad, Mark Chester.
So, this week is kind of the beginning of a new format. So, typically, if you've listened to the podcast or engaged with it before, you will have found that the whole thing's been wrapped up in an interview with a guest. But often, once we'd had the guest in, myself and Mark would spend some time dissecting some of what we spoke about and looking back on it retrospectively. So we thought we'd actually introduce that as part of it. And the other element that we thought would be cool to add in is Lindsay, our producer, who would be the one waving her arms or speaking in our ears to say, move on to the next subject or get on with it or whatever she might say. She'd often have a great perspective after we talked about it from a point of view as a mum. So we just thought, you know what, let's rope Lindsay in. And she's agreed somewhat begrudgingly.
No, it's great to be part of it. And I feel like a little intruder in the dad cave, not being a dad. But hopefully I'll be able to kind of ask some questions and add a few things from a mum's perspective and see if there's any differences.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, whilst also keeping us on track,
yeah,
as ever.
Well, you were always the wisest person in the room anyway, so it's really nice to hear from you now. So that's great, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's great to have it. And we're going to be talking about friendship today, aren't we?
Yeah, so we thought it'd be great to look at friendship. And it's something we've discussed in the past, how men seem less able to forge new friendships, to maintain existing ones, and you'd come across the book Best of Friends by Phil Knox, is that right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, excellent book. Really good read. Unusual to get a book about friendship, I think. Very unusual to get a book about friendship written by a guy. So it's well worth a read.
Yeah, so we'll be getting to that part of the interview in just a bit. So do stick around because Phil had some great things to say and then we'll give our kind of retrospective take. But every episode now, Mark, given that I'm still in the throes of early fatherhood, I wanted to just kind of share with you something that's happened that's kind of like typical to the stage of life I'm in. I'm calling it a dad lemma, which is a pretty clever play on the word dad and dilemma.
It's very clever, Stephen. I wouldn't Plakes expect together. Anything less from you. Yeah,
I'll write it out for you so you can kind
It must have taken you all of 30 seconds to come up with that. Well done.
I'm insulted. So the thing from the last week that I wanted to share isn't so much something that you can necessarily speak into for advice, but it was a perfect moment where I thought this is very much a time of life where this would not happen at any other point. So a bit vulnerable, but I was using the toilet, Mark.
Really?
And Lindsay.
Wow.
For that matter. And
Lindsay was using the toilet as well.
No.
I think you need to clarify that point.
I'm speaking to the room.
Ah, good.
And I was using the toilet, shall we say, for its full usage. Making full use of the toilet facility.
I think we know what you mean.
And I had that nightmare moment where I'm kind of done using the toilet and I look up and there's no toilet paper. And I think, oh, for goodness sake, I'm not sure this has ever actually happened to me. It's something that only happens in Ben Stiller movies. And I thought, you know what? I've got a child now who can communicate. So I shouted for Immy and said, sweetheart, yes, daddy, could you get daddy some toilet paper, please? And I hear a little footsteps coming after about 30 seconds. I'm like, great. She's retrieving something for me that I need. This is really helpful. And then under the toilet door, a single piece of toilet paper comes under. And before I've realized, she's ran off again. I call her and there's no response. So in terms of, I didn't communicate, I said just some toilet paper, and she could argue what she gave me was some toilet paper. So I had to be pretty creative.
Do you know what? I'd love to ask you some questions about this, but I thought there's not one question that's popped into my head that I feel I can actually ask while we're doing this podcast.
I think it's just the realities
it's a fantastic story.
I think if there's any lessons to draw out of it, it's be specific with your children.
Yes.
In those moments.
It's interesting, really, because I kind of feel like you know, you sometimes share these stories with me as a, you know, just to see whether I've got any wisdom to share from, because obviously I'm at a later stage of parenting. Yeah. Kids are in the 20s.
Yeah.
I don't have any wisdom to share with you on this topic.
Okay, well, I'm glad I got it off my chest anyway.
Yeah.
So, Mark, should we get into the interview with Phil, and then we'll kind of come back and give our perspective?
Yeah, let's do that. Welcome, Phil. It's great to have you in the Dad Cave. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Brilliant. Great to be with you, gents. My name's Phil. I live in Birmingham and married to Danny or Danielle. We've got two boys, Caleb, who's 10. His love language is football. And Joss, who's short for Josiah, who's 4. His love language is fighting. I live in Birmingham. My day job is I'm an author and speaker. And I'm a dad, which is particularly relevant to this conversation.
So you're not from Birmingham, are you?
Well, I was born in Sheffield.
Okay.
So I'm a missionary to the Midlands.
Okay. And what would your football affiliation be?
I'm an Aston Villa fan.
Are you?
Oh, yeah. All in. And trying
so
to
sorry.
Trying to dissuade my 10-year-old who's in love with Grealish and Haaland to not support Man City.
My family are Man United supporters, and my second eldest niece has gone Man City, and you know it's empty.
Yeah. And for someone, you know, if you're watching this, you know, a bit like Mark, I struggle in the hair department. And my son is sports a very kind of Jack Grealish, Alfie Inga Haaland, Erling Haaland kind of hairstyle. And the other day he comes up to me and he goes, Daddy, why don't you take some hair from your legs and put it on your head? I then reminded him that genetics are a terrible thing, and to enjoy his footballer locks while they last.
Yeah. I defined it like this to my wife recently. I said, the worst thing about aging for a man is there's less hair where you want it, more hair where you don't. I'm afraid to say.
Well, this is a fascinating chat, but we really need to get into the subject. And Phil, you've written a couple of books. Your latest book is on friendship. So let's get straight into it, because I think there's a line in the book that's the standout line from the book. And when I read it out, which I'm going to do now, then some of the guys listening to this will think, well, that's just stating the obvious. But then if you put it in the context of the fact that you write this line in a section of the book on healthy living, about how to live healthily.
Yeah.
And this is what you say. You say, it really is better to eat kebabs with friends than eat a salad on your own.
Amen.
So explain it, Phil.
Yeah, great. So what I explore, first of all, what I've been captivated by over the last few years is just how good friendship is for us. I think we talk about loads of things. We don't talk enough about friendship, and we don't realise how flipping good it is for us. Mm. And so what I've explored, I've looked into the kind of the wisdom of the philosophers. I've looked into the latest science. I've looked into the sociological evidence for how good friendship is for us. And we just don't talk enough about it. So the line, it is better to eat kebabs with friends than salads on your own. It really is true. So scientifically, you can live really unhealthily. So you can eat terribly, do no exercise, smoke, drink. But if you've got good friends, you will statistically live longer than someone who keeps themselves physically in shape, but is socially isolated. Now, I think probably on the Dad Cave, we probably need to say it's better to kind of keep yourself in shape as well. That, yeah. If you're going to live the longest, that's what's going to take place. But that's the power of friendship. I talk in the book about there was a case study from a town in Pennsylvania in the 1950s, America, where no one was having heart attacks and no one could work out why. So they looked at the water sources, they looked at the lifestyles. These people weren't health freaks. What was keeping them alive, what was stopping them having heart attacks, is the deep bonds of trust in their society. So 3 to 4 generations lived under one roof. There was loads of trust, religious life at the centre of their community, which meant people met and hung out and had common interests. And interestingly then, what happened in the decades that followed, they became, all their social structures became more like the rest of America, and their rates of heart disease returned to the national average. But that's a beautiful picture of what is physically possible if we're really connected. And I think one of the reasons we're in absolute crisis at the moment as a world is our friendships are really suffering.
Yeah, yeah. I love the fact that you don't even entertain the fact that it's better to eat salad with your friends.
Yeah.
It's not even in there.
No.
That's not going to end up on a quote board, is it, Mark?
No.
But also, you know, we might come on to how you make friends in the minutes ahead. But but I think inviting your mates around for salad is probably less compelling than do you fancy a kebab?
Without doubt.
So
one of the realities is this is the Dad Cave, and so we're talking to men who are fathers. And it goes without saying, or maybe it doesn't, but it seems obvious to me that men just aren't as good at maintaining friendships, at making new friendships.
Yeah.
So typically, men are less likely than women to maintain older friendships and less likely to establish new ones.
Yeah.
So why do you think there is this disparity between how women operate in that space and how men operate?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, statistically, I can tell you 1 in 3 men say they have no close friends, which is worse than worse than women.
Yeah.
Had this fascinating moment on the way to the book launch where I was in the ride to the place where we were launching the book, and I said to the taxi driver, we were talking about our days, and I said to him, "Tell me about your friendships." And he said, "You know, in the whole world, I've only got 2 friends," and that's quite typical when I talk to men. Mm. I think what I'd say in terms of men, I think there's a few factors at play. I think the first is that I think we're far more likely to have lots of kind of acquaintances and very few deep friendships. So I think one of our challenges is depth. And so when I've talked to a lot of my mates about their own friendships, they've said, "You know, I've got loads of mates. But when you say, "Actually, have you got anyone you can really call, you know, when the proverbial hits the fan?" I recently had a friend whose marriage has broken down, and he said to me, I've realised how few friends I have. And I think, though, that depth of friendship is a real challenge for us. Mm. So I think that's one of them. I think the second thing is there's a kind of, I think one of the core things that we do to develop that depth is around time and vulnerability. And I think we're often kind of, our time is really stretched. And finding that time is like oxygen to friendship. You starve the most furious of infernos of oxygen and it dies. You starve the best of friendships of time and it will die. It doesn't matter how good the friendship is. And so I think that time piece, but also vulnerability piece, we are less good traditionally at those deeper conversations. And so one of the kind of my encouragements in the book is how do we foster some of those for all of us, but for men, I think that's particularly relevant. I think the other thing for us fellas is we have a kind of perception of how friendship works, of kind of, you know, going out for coffee and sitting opposite each other. I don't know men, right? I don't know many men who that's their idea of kind of, you know, an evening out with a fella. Do you know what I mean?
Sounds horrific.
Sat in a really, in a really intense conversation. You know, even as we, you know, as we film this, we're kind of sat, you know, angular to each other, and that feels a lot more comfortable than if we were kind of sat looking each other in the eyes over, you know, over coffee.
Big time.
And I think we've kind of almost like we need to rewrite some of the rules for what that time and vulnerability look like for fellas, kind of working and serving and doing stuff alongside each other. So like my best mate's a builder, and so I don't think he ever goes out for coffee with anyone. In fact, if he does go out for coffee with other men, I'll be really upset, because he certainly, if you said to Ads, you know, "Do you fancy going out for coffee?" You're like, "But what are we going to do alongside that?" Do you know what I mean? He'd want to be, you know, at least to be a game. But the way that we kind of like hang out is we'll, you know, we'll weight train together, we'll run together. But that doesn't mean we can't have the depth of conversation that is needed for us to kind of maintain a really
It's almost incidental though, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Can I bring Lindsay in here? So Linz, you are a mum. So, you know, that whole thing of women would be more inclined to just go for coffee and talk. Like, is that true for you?
I would certainly like, if I'm getting in touch with friends I think I've not seen for a while, like the kind of conversations we would have would be, "Oh, do you want to meet for a catch up?" And that basically means, "Do you want to like go for a coffee?" So would you ever say, as guys, would you ever say, "Do you want to meet for a catch up?" to any of your friends?
No.
Have to be activity based? Would you say, "Do you want to meet for a beer or a pizza or a walk?" Or would you ever just meet for a catch up?
I don't know whether the word catch up maybe. But I would meet up with someone for a drink of some kind of coffee. Or
breakfast.
Say, "Do you want to go for a coffee?" You know, rather than a catch up. So it wouldn't be around the talk. It'd be around, "Let's have a drink together."
Yeah. That would
be that phrasology that's different.
Yeah, because a catch up
most of the time
it would
be activity.
It could be like, "Oh, I'll come over to yours and we'll just like chat." Like
catch up. Oh gosh, everyone, we're all feeling a bit nervous now, aren't we?
And I think what I'd also do is I'd try and coincide it with something that was also amazing happening. So if there's a good sporting event on, I'd try and combine it with, and by the way,
do you know
this
what
is happening?
So United's last televised game of the season was on a Thursday night, and there's someone I wanted to catch up with. So, you know, internal language, I wanted to catch catch up with this person. But I was looking at my diary and I thought, well, there, the United game's on, so we'll go to watch the United game. But it won't be about the catch-up, it'll be the game's on.
Yeah.
And then anything else is incidental. Yeah. But there's not, the pressure of the meeting is not on, we're catching up now.
Yeah.
But why is that? Why? You mentioned the word rules before, and we need to rewrite the rules, which I thought was a lovely way to describe it. Why do the rules say that we don't get together for a catch-up?
And the answer is I don't know.
Don't know.
But I think these are the mysteries of culture, isn't it? I think sometimes these kind of things develop. But I think the thing I'd say around why those are developed is probably a bit of fear. I think what I found, and certainly I feel this within myself, there's something about vulnerability that's scary. I don't know whether you fellas feel that, but I think for me, when I, you know, even with my best mate who I've known for nearly 30 years, when I tell him about a failure or even a fear that I have and open my heart up in that way, even though I'm never 30 years, I'm still like, is he going to judge me? Will he still want to be my friend? That still is an underlying fear there a bit. And we like to think that our friends think we are amazing and and come with almost perfect and heroic and the best dads and brilliant at work and successful and great footballer or whatever else. And I think our fear of vulnerability, we fear rejection or fear that they might think we're weak in some way. I certainly feel that.
I wonder if it's just part of how men are wired. I think we're just wired differently. So the vulnerability thing, what's so true about it is almost contagious, because as soon as one person makes that step, then you're like more inclined to say, well, yeah, recently I've had this and this and this. But it takes one of the people in that friendship to kind of make that a thing. And I don't think it occurs to a lot of men.
And I think the other thing I found about vulnerability is it feels like weakness, but it looks like courage. Mm. So when you're with someone else who opens up, the overriding feeling I have towards them is fair play. Well done for doing that. And as you say, I think that again gives permission for people to follow.
Perhaps the vulnerability thing isn't worlds apart.
Yeah, because we do want to talk, don't we?
Yeah.
We do want to talk about stuff. I'm thinking, like, the way I talk to guys is on the golf course a lot. Nice. And I'm just thinking about, as we're chatting, I'm thinking, we often play the first hole. By the time we get to the second tee, someone's asked a very deep and meaningful question of somebody else. You know, and it's amazing how quickly we can get to that point.
Brilliant.
But I don't know whether we would get there that quickly if we said, well, let's just sit down and talk about our feelings.
Yeah.
It's because it's just naturally happening in the moment, isn't it? Yeah.
Statistically, again, just moving on a little, another reason why it's a challenge for fellas is that often in married relationships or with spouses, men are statistically more likely to delegate the kind of social secretary role, if you like, to their partner. And so there's often a real challenge when one partner in a relationship dies or a relationship breaks down, men are far more likely statistically to be lonely, isolated, without friends, because a lot of the kind of the delegation of that kind of social role has been delegated to the woman in that relationship. So that, I think that's often a real challenge as well.
Is that what it looks like in your house?
I think we're all right. I think we're quite balanced. I think I've been really impacted. Actually, my dad died when I was quite young, and one of the lessons I learned from that really was my mum. One of the things that kept my mum strong during that period and beyond was she had a lot of relationships that kind of were maintained outside of. Kind of almost like outside, he had a lot of friendships that weren't linked to the marriage. So she then had enough kind of interests outside my dad, if you like. And I think that really impacted me as a young man to go, actually, I need to have some friends, some good mates who I can rely on that aren't just, they're not just couples we hang out with through the relationship I have with my wife. Mm. So we have a good balance. And I've got a really close relationship, my brother and sister, really good kind of best mate, and we balance that quite well, I think, for my wife and I.
So you talk about your dad quite a lot throughout the book,
and
you obviously had a great relationship with your dad. What other sort of things did you learn about friendship from your dad, Phil?
I think from my dad and I were quite different, actually. So my dad was a real introvert. And one of the things that I think is really fascinating is what friendship looks like for different personality types. And so I think for my dad as an introvert, he I learned a lot about what friendship looks like for introverts, actually. Yeah. And interestingly, introverts have better quality friendships. So we talk about the depth, and that is often a challenge for dads. Introverts are far more likely to have better quality friendships because they're better one-on-one in the party. They don't kind of work the room, if you like, and they kind of, you know, talk much more, you know, intentionally with one or two people. I've kind of then, as someone who is actually a balance between an introvert and extrovert, I think I learned from him the value of having a few really close friends. And I have to sometimes rein in my extrovert tendencies. And one of the things I talk about in the book is that quantity is no substitute for quality when it comes to friendship. And especially for dads, who it's tempting to have loads of mates and almost like let friendship happen to you. I think I learned from my dad that intentionality of really disproportionately investing relational energy in a few people, especially when time is finite, relational capacity, we just haven't got the ability to maintain loads of friendships. I really learned from that from my dad.
So part of me would make an assumption that people who are more extroverted, it just doesn't even occur to them, they're not really that proactive. And that's not negatively, they just let life happen to them. And therefore, they would never pick up the phone and call or text or, and say, it'd be good to go and watch the football. Because I think a lot of men probably drift away from their friendships accidentally. And I guess my assumptions are there's certain personality types that would be better at doing that. But I don't know if it's that straightforward or not. But there will be men listening to this who aren't on the front foot with it.
Yeah. I think the first thing is that if you get invited to something, sometimes the best thing to do is to go, even if you think it's going to be awkward and even if you're not sure you're going to know someone there. I've had a couple of times, even in the last year, where I've had been invites on a WhatsApp, right? You know, or added to a WhatsApp group for a party.
Yep,
I don't know the person that well, but I've kind of gone, I think it would mean something for them if I was there. When we talk about the power of friendship, sometimes we assume that the reason to get involved in friendship is because it's good for us. The great thing about friendship is it's reciprocal. So not only do we get the gift of life, we get to give that gift of life. So sometimes the best thing to do when you get an invite, even if it's a bit awkward, is have a go. And I've been really surprised, actually, a couple of times where I've gone to parties where I thought, I'm not really going to know anyone. But it would be a real blessing. That person's like, do you know what I mean? They've reached out for some reason. Maybe actually they need a bit of friendship and a bit of depth and want to talk to someone. Try to accept the invite if you can. Balance that with the wisdom of, you know, you can only invest your relational energy so far. But sometimes the best thing to do is go, I'm going to have a go. And because I think we often pursue comfort. We only pursue relationships if we're comfortable. Sometimes actually we need to be uncomfortable to grow in those places. I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing is, now and again, have a go at inviting a few people. And it doesn't matter. Don't take it too personally if no one turns up. And sometimes even a bit of a last minute spontaneous thing is actually quite good. So I had a thing where a couple of weeks ago, my wife was going out for a girls' night and I thought I could sit on my own and, you know, watch Saturday night TV. Or I could just like whack out a message to as many fellas in my WhatsApp. Just, you know, I think I invited 12 to 15 fellas who kind of live vaguely near me within half an hour and said, do you want to come round and drink beer and eat crisps and play games? That's literally what I said in the thing. And
strong ask.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah. And we had 6 turn up. And yeah. You know, we had a great time, played a bit of poker. You know, Danny then came back from her ladies' night and I think got a bit jealous that we were probably having a bit of a better time than she'd had. And it was a bit of a, you know, temporary moment. But then since that, a couple of fellas had gone back and gone, that was amazing. Can we do that again? And again, it was really spontaneous. I hadn't planned it. I planned it at like 48 hours notice or something. But there were a lot of fellas who just fancied a little chat and a catch up and, you know.
So I think this is almost like, the doctor saying, well, you need to take these vitamins, because I think the men who are less inclined to do that, who obviously aren't you, who wouldn't think to do that, they almost, something like listening to this podcast might be the thing that needs to jolt some dads into action to say, look, it might not occur to you and you might not even care, but you have to trust us to a degree, but more so the statistics that say this is going to be good for you. And you have to kind of rise above sometimes just that choice of, well, I could sit here and watch a film I really like on my own or invite people over. I'm right in between extroversion and introversion. I sway. So there'll be some times where I think, oh yeah, I'd love to invite some guys over, but times where I wouldn't be inclined to. And I think the encouragement is rise above that and just put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Because it is better for you in the long run.
Yeah. And you need friends for the best and worst of times. So it's easy to go, well, you need friends because when the proverbial hits the fan, you need some mates to be around you. But you also need friends for the best of times. You know, I think as I've journeyed recently with a friend of mine who the storm has hit his life and he realises how few friends he has, he needs those in that moment. And you can't just instantly rent a friend. You know, actually those relationships take time over time. But I think what I've discovered is it is whatever the cost, it's worth it. It really is.
So let's talk about numbers of friends, because people out there will be listening and thinking, I haven't got many friends, or I've got too many friends, I can't keep in touch with them all. How many friends can we have, should we have?
Yeah, I mean, I can give you the science on this. And first of all, before I start throwing numbers out there, these are maximum numbers for each kind of circle. Some people will go, flipping it, those are some numbers. I can only count a few friends on one hand. But scientifically, what they've discovered is there's an amazing anthropologist called Robin Dunbar, who's a kind of friendship guru and, you know, scientific, academic. And what he's found is he's measured the size of brains, the size of our human brain, and the size of kind of social tribe that we are capable of having relationships with. And he's found that we can only have 150 meaningful relationships. So these aren't your friends on Facebook. You know, some people go, oh, I've got 5,000 friends on Facebook. Those aren't friends.
Of course you have.
Those aren't friends. Yeah. 150 is your maximum capacity. What's fascinating about that number is, you know, I think the average Christmas card list in the UK, if people write Christmas cards, 148. Average size of a UK wedding, 144. Average size of a village in 1086, 1,000 years ago, 150. In 700 years later, that had only increased to 160. There's something about this number, about our kind of maximum kind of capacity for relationships. And these are people who you'd meet in the pub and you'd know them, they'd know you. You know, you could have a reasonable conversation.
This isn't really close friends.
No, this is the widest possible. Mm. Maximum kind of circle of meaningful connection. Then what Robin Dunbar did is he asked, how many good friends can you have? How many people who can you have a reasonable relationship with where you're kind of in contact, I don't know, once a month, once every few weeks? And the answer to that's about 12. So you can have about 12, you know, really good friends. You know, that's your inner circle. When something really, you know, good or bad happens, they're the first people you tell. Then he said, how many great friends can you have? And the answer to that's about 3. And I think in terms of how many friends do you need, it's basic, you need 3. You know, if you're a couple of people in your inner circle who you can be really vulnerable with, you can talk through. They are the people who you will go to when the storms come. They're the people you laugh the most with. They're the first people when you're throwing a party. They're the first people you want there. They're on your list. And the challenge that I think the challenge for most people and most fellas is, we think, I can have as many friends as I like. You know, people, the Facebook friend thing. Mm. I've got loads of friends. We've only got the capacity for those really to go really, you know, really deep and have those, that meaningful relationship with about 3. And then, but then to think about that little middle circle as well of about 12, that's a probably healthy number as well.
And often the challenge for dads is how to find the time to do that, isn't it? Because there'll be 100%. Lots of guys listening to this, perhaps with very young children, who are thinking, I just haven't got the time because I'm working, I'm getting home, I'm looking after the kids. I'm just wondering, does becoming a dad give you the opportunity to make friends, or does it make it harder to make friends?
I think on a couple of levels, I think it gives, first of all, it does make it harder because the demands, you know, I look back with kind of wistful eyes as to what I did with all that time before I had kids. So I think the time thing, certainly the pressure on that. But I think there are certain activities that you can do with dads alongside dads, you know, that give you those side by side moments, you know, and your wife will often thank you for taking the kids out to go and hang out with another dad. I once tried to put my newborn into my golf bag. That didn't quite work. but maybe not that activity. But I think the second thing that being a dad gives you is an opportunity to develop depth. Because I think there's this unique shared experience. Shared experience is brilliant for friendship, isn't it? And I think there's this unique shared experience that isn't just the events that happen to you through being a dad. It's also the kind of you know, one of the questions I love to ask other dads is, do you love being a dad? And I've hardly had, I think I've had one mate went, not really, you know, but most of us, ooh, when asked that question, go, yeah, it's amazing. But actually then, but there's something kind of, there's something deeply that happens emotionally for us with being a dad that enables us to kind of say, what is it about that for you? Tell me about that. And most people actually open up into a quite a depth of conversation there. But also I think one of the things a friend of mine talks about, the levels of conversation you have, you know, so your top level is kind of like, what did you get up to the weekend, let's talk about the football scores. That's kind of level one, very superficial conversation. Then there's kind of level two of conversation where we begin to talk about what we love, what we hate, you know, a bit more kind of more value stuff. Let's talk about this issue in the news. And then I'd say there's a third layer of conversation where we begin to get a bit more vulnerable. And there, for me, we're talking about hopes and fears. And fatherhood, being a dad, gives you a great opportunity to talk about those. What are your hopes for your children? What are your fears about kind of their lives? That gives you a great, and they're really vulnerable questions. And actually unpacking some of those and why we feel those and giving those the opportunity to connect on that level, that could be really helpful for dads. And actually it can be quite a natural way in to some to a depth of conversation. Whereas, you know, the, when we're talking with Lindsay about looking each other in the eye and go, how are you doing? You know, let's catch up. That might be more difficult.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think joining a dad's group is a great thing to do, isn't it? Because yeah, you're spending time with the kids, but you're also making friends.
Yeah.
And you know, I think back to Who Let the Dads Out, and we started it back in 2003. Yeah. I remember on the 15-year anniversary, three dads turning up at the door, and the children were teenagers then, and saying that actually we met at Who Let the Dads Out, we became great friends at Who Let the Dads Out, and we've gone through our fatherhood journey together. So we've done stuff together just as guys, but we've also done stuff with the kids. We've gone camping trips and all that kind of thing. And they'd made some great friendships. So I think sometimes fatherhood is an opportunity. I encourage the guys out there, if you've got a group in your area, go and join it. Yeah. If not, start a group together. Brilliant.
Can I ask a question? Phil, your book is called The Best of Friends, and you talked about your best mate. But as dads, would you say you have a best friend, or is that still a bit like primary school? Like, it's quite awkward, isn't it, to say you've got a best friend? What would your answers be to that?
Bezzy mates.
Wow, that's a good question, isn't it? Yeah. Now we've got to be vulnerable now. We've got to say whether we've got a best friend or not. And we do risk here offending all the other people who aren't the best friend, don't we?
You don't have to name them.
Do we have a best friend?
Yeah, I've got best friends. Yeah, yeah.
Would you say my best friend is?
Yeah, my best friend's Adam, yes. Yeah. And then there's the awkward thing about is your wife your best friend? I did a seminar recently on friendship, and this couple came up really nervously at the end of the day. And they said, you've been talking about friendship. We're each other's best friends. Is that okay? And I'm like, if I said no, I think it would have broken their hearts. But I said, you know, you're good, crack on. Yeah. I think it depends on the dynamics of friendships, to be honest. Some people do, some people don't. I think the most important thing is you've got some kind of inner circle, somewhere between one and five friends who you are tight with, and they're more than just mates.
I would say a guy, Sam, like, he's my oldest friend. And when we were kids, I think we would have said best friends, but I don't think we would use that terminology perhaps these days. Whereas I've got other friends who I actually see far more of, and, you know, who are also just be very close friends. But I don't think I've actually been able to say, like, oh yes, so-and-so is my best friend. If Instagram's anything to go by, I have more acquaintances on Instagram who say things like lunch with my bezzy, and none of them are ever men.
BFF.
I can say that much.
Stephen, do you have some questions for Phil?
Yeah, I do actually. So every episode I do a bit of a quick fire list of questions that I give very little thought to. I mean, I wrote this list of questions not 5 minutes before we started recording. However, I think it just tests our guest and also gives us a bit of insight into who you are. So this is the quick fire round, all right? You ready, Phil?
Let's go. Yeah.
Okay. What is your least favorite Australian mammal?
Kangaroo.
It sounded like you'd already thought about
that. I don't know why that's so instantly funny. If I offered you something from Greg's, what would you have?
Sausage roll.
Would you rather fight a German shepherd-sized duck or 10 duck-sized German shepherds?
Just the one German Shepherd-sized duck, please.
Baby Shark on repeat for an hour, or a live performance of Let It Go for 2 hours?
Oh, the shorter one.
Okay. Britney or Christina?
Oh, Britney.
If you could only ever wear just sandals or just boots, which would you choose?
Sandals.
What friend of your wife's is least tolerable?
Oh, for goodness sake. Friend of my wife's is probably me.
Oh, that's a good answer.
That is a very good answer.
If you could have lunch with one dead politician, who would it be?
Struggling to name a dead politician. Margaret Thatcher.
Okay. Don't know what to read into that.
Great.
Do you consider the toilet a sanctuary?
Big time. Yeah.
Wonderful.
There's a joke in our house about needs strong reading material for the toilet, to the extent that now my 10-year-old goes to the toilet with a book. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that's...
He's learned from his dad.
Super,
if there's nothing else I've passed on, you know, he now takes entertainment to the toilet.
That seems to be a guy thing. I don't know a single woman who doesn't say my husband or partner spends an extraordinarily large amount of time in the toilet. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
I don't know if you, is that true for you, Mark?
No, that is true for me. Yeah, yeah, mm. Yeah. It's thinking time for me.
Snap. Yeah.
Thinking time. I'm just impressed with how Phil navigated those questions, because that was expertly done.
You did a great job.
Stephen's quickfire questions are very difficult to navigate. But
I named the only dead politician I could think of. So,
and I think the questions probably say more about my psyche than they actually reveal about our guest for the day. I do have one question that occurred to me yesterday, and I don't really know. It's quite a hard one, but moving back into the kind of the depths of the friendship stuff, I was reading a book a couple of years ago. I think it was during one of the lockdowns, and it was this 800-page book on Lincoln called Team of Rivals. Really, really good book. And something
is he a dead politician?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I'd love to have a meal with Lincoln. But one of the things I found really, really fascinating was there's lots of little excerpts of journals and things of that nature, where Lincoln would talk about a friend, and you'd see, and there'd be, you know, journal entries of the friend talking about Lincoln, and letters they would send each other that spoke with real, real deep affection and an honesty about the level of appreciation for each other. Like things like, "You're one of my dearest and most beloved friends," things of that nature. And what struck me when I was reading that book was, I can't imagine speaking to one of my friends like that. But it seemed that was fairly common, or at least more normal in a bygone age. And do you think one, do you think there's a clear reason for that? And two, do you think it's something we should try to be stronger in, like saying to our mates that we appreciate them?
Love you, man.
I think we do need to
express that, but how we express that, we need to read the room, probably. I think often, I don't know about you guys, I find humour is a little defence mechanism that happens. So sometimes, genuinely, I've had moments where, like, I've been speaking about friendship. I do a lot of kind of talking about friendship. And sometimes, I think even with, like, you're like, kind of, especially with, like, you know, younger people, I've encouraged them to get their phones out and, like, text a friend and say, basically, like, thanks for being my friend, or something, you know, something of just expressing that. So then the problem is, then as a speaker, you have to model that. So I've, like, text ads or someone else to go, you know, just want to say I really appreciate you, really grateful for your friendship or something. And then the insult or emojis that often come back, do you know what I mean? Because they're clearly grateful. Yeah. But there's a bit of a, like, what, you know, are you dying or something? Do you know what I mean? Or something that comes back. But I think those moments of expressing with words our gratitude to our friends is really important. I think you have to be, you know, wise about how you do that and what you say, and not kind of, you know, be over the top and read the level of depth of friendship. But I think we should do it more. I really do.
I love that. This is going to inspire loads of guys to go out and say to their friends, "I love you."
Yeah,
I love you.
Yeah, or just, or, I tell you what, I tell you what's quite funny. I read this amazing book on friendship. But
is it yours?
No, it's not. No, all it's right. not. It's another. I read every book on friendship I could find in researching the book. But one of the was a book by a fella, and he wrote the book because he wanted to get married to his girlfriend, but what was holding him back was he didn't know anyone well enough to be there to be his best man, to invite to be his best man. So he was like. So he began to really write into friendship. And anyway, one of the things he did was, which is great advice if you want to grow a network of friends, is every month he set up something called Pub Club. And he basically texted every fella who he felt, you know, comfortable in his phone, you know, I'm going to be at this pub between 7 and 9. I'll buy a load of crisps, come along. And if you want, you know, if you want to just hang out and chat and catch up with a bunch of other fellas, you can. And he basically said it was a revelation because loads of people just turned up because they were desperate for a bit of connection. Anyway, off the back of one of these pub clubs, he then texted one of his mates, said something a bit mushy. Do you know what I mean? Really grateful for your friendship or something. And then kind of put it down. I was like, what have I done? You know, and actually then got something back. I think a bit mushy, but then I think they diffused it with a bit of humour.
Yeah.
Off the back of that, which I think we often are quite good at as well. So Yeah.
There's a lovely line in your book. It says, mountaintops, valleys, we need the best of friends in both.
Yeah.
I love that line. And it's a good way to probably sum up our discussion today. So Phil's book is called The Best of Friends, Choose Wisely, Care Well. And Phil, all our guests in the Dad Cave, we always ask them to bring a dad joke. Mm. So do you want to fire away? What dad joke have you got?
I'm going to dig deep. Why are pirates called pirates?
I don't know. Why are pirates called pirates?
Because they are.
I knew the punchline, and I was just waiting for your level of commitment and delivery, and I think you did a great job. I've got one on topic. Can I throw that, Mark?
You can, yeah, fire away.
What's the type of boat that will never sink?
I don't know. What's the type of boat that will never sink?
A friendship.
Oh, fantastic.
Beautiful.
Brilliant. What a way to finish. Thanks. Phil, you've been a fantastic guest. Thank you so much for joining us in the Dad Cave.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks for having us.
Well, that was great, wasn't it, Stephen? And anything stand out for you?
I think what stayed with me after we spoke to Phil that day was how crazy it is that the quality and nature of your friendships can actually have an effect on your health. I think in the moment I was more caught up in the whole kebab thing and whether or not salad would be a better sell. And I don't think I really took it in that it can actually affect your health and longevity. I think about health a lot. I exercise fairly regularly. I try and eat as well as I can. But to really invest in the friendships that I already have, I've kind of felt, re-galvanized to lean into those. I'm really hoping that people listening to it will do the same. Was there anything in particular for you?
I liked the bit of the conversation where we talked about whether becoming a dad is an opportunity to make more friends or whether it gets harder. And I think there are many opportunities to make more friends when you're a dad. And I mean, one of the projects we run is Who Let the Dads Out? And churches up and down the country are running groups that dads can go along to and with their children and make friends with other dads.
Yeah, I knew about Who Let the Dads Out before I knew you existed. So that's, in some ways, got to be a good thing for you.
Yeah.
Or a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to take that, really. But
Yeah. So another element of this new format, Mark, as you well know, and listeners, is that we're going to tell our dad jokes at the end of the episode. And Lindsay is going to rank our performance with 3 different sound effects. So if the joke is, well, Lindsay, you talk us through it.
Yep. So if the joke is very poor, you will hear cricket sounds, which sounds like this. Yep. If it's an adequate joke, you will hear kind of a little bit of clapping.
Yeah.
And if it's a great joke, you'll hear some rapturous applause.
Okay.
I love the phrase adequate joke.
Yeah, I know. It's.
I kind of feel that's really a high bar even for us, adequate joke.
If it's only adequate, is it even classed as a joke?
Yeah.
I don't know. Shall I go first?
Yes, please do.
Okay.
Fire away.
I think this is going to do well for me. The other day I tripped over when I was in France. I fell over. I fell. I fall. Lindsay, you're trying to suppress a laugh. You've got to let yourself enjoy it.
I think Lindsay's laughing at how terrible it is.
I think it needed too much explaining.
It did, yeah.
I felt like Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, exactly. How do you know those crickets aren't applauding?
Let's hear from
Mark.
All
right. Let's give it a go. Okay, so what do you call a factory that only makes okay goods?
I don't know. What do you call a factory that only makes okay goods?
A satisfactory.
Have you been bribing our producer again? That's what? That's crazy talk.
I did say she was the wisest person in the room. And that's great. I've just told an adequate joke.
Yeah.
Well done. So why don't we do this? If we do each episode, we'll do our dad joke and we'll tally it. How about 0 points for crickets? How about 1 point for that kind of like mediocre golf clap? And 3 points if we get rapturous applause. How about that?
So then right. Mark is 1-0 at the moment.
Yeah, he's got 1 point in the table.
Sounds fantastic. I love a good point system.
I know. So great talking that through, Mark. I think people will hopefully find that really helpful.
Yeah, I think they will, yeah.
And we'll see you again on the next one. Bye for now.
Thanks for joining us.
The Dad Cave podcast was brought to you by Care for the Family. If you're a Care for the Family partner listening, thank you so much. The support we give wouldn't be possible without you. If you're listening to this and you're not a partner, but you'd like to join the thousands of people who are standing with us monthly, you can do that at cff.org.uk/donate. And as a thank you, we'll send you a pack of resources for you and your family. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.